Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers, issues, etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
The Muslim Brotherhood, great concern to a lot of people. They are a threat to the USA.
I think that the Muslim Brotherhood is one faction in Egypt. They don't have majority support in Egypt, but they are well organized, and there are strains of their ideology that are anti-U.S. There's no doubt about it.
That's President Obama talking about the Muslim Brotherhood yesterday with Bill O'Reilly in a live interview before the Super Bowl. It's a very interesting question. What is the Muslim Brotherhood now that we're going on several weeks of violent protests and uprising in Egypt? Their involvement there is undeniable. They're actually listed as the parties with whom the vice president of Egypt is negotiating for some kind of a truce there. Joining us to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood on this Monday afternoon, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
The president says that some of their philosophies are anti-American. What would you add to the concerns that he and others ought to have about the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, they're not only anti-American, they're anti-freedom. No matter where it is in America or anywhere else, they're anti-Christianity. They're anti any religion that isn't Islamic. And they've been in existence since 1928, and they are at the moment very much involved in trying to destabilize the situation in Egypt. And I'm not the first one to say it, but it's sort of reminiscent of what happened in Iran back in 1978 when Ayatollah Khomeini came out of exile and took over. There was an uprising, and before long the radicals took place, and they are in control of in Iran to this day. And a very similar situation could happen in Egypt.
What if you were going to, instruct the State Department or one of its agencies in a primer in the Muslim Brotherhood, its history, its background, and where it stands today? What would you tell them, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, as I said, it's the organization has been a radical group, been in existence since 1928. It was responsible for assassinating Anwar Sadat in 1981 for his having signed a peace treaty with Israel in 1977. It supports the Hezbollah's war against the Jews. It glorifies Osama bin Laden. It advocates violent jihad. And here's something that we need to remember. It basically has four slogans. The Quran is our constitution. The jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest objective. And the prophet is our leader. And one more, Allahu Akbar, meaning Allah is the greatest. Those are their slogans. And none of those bode well for peace and tranquility in any part of the world.
So if the Muslim Brotherhood were to gain control or political ascendancy in Egypt, what would this likely mean first for the population in Egypt, especially 12% Christian Coptic population there?
That's a very good question. The Coptics, of course, have not been faring too well as it is, and they would fare worse under any kind of Muslim Brotherhood takeover. I dread to think of what would happen to the few Christian called the Coptics in Egypt. I really hate to think of what would happen to them. It would be a pity and a tragedy, to be sure. They also, for example, are very anti-Israel. They're anti-Semitic, and they want to take Israel off the face of the globe, so to speak. They are closely linked to Wahhabism, too, the radical group that's been in existence since Wahhabi, who died back in the 1790s. And has been instrumental in bringing about Osama bin Laden, of that group he's a descendant of. So, as I said, it's a fearful situation if they should take over. And I hope and pray, and I hope that all Christians would pray, that this does not take place.
What would it mean for the United States if the Muslim Brotherhood gained some kind of political ascendancy in Egypt?
Well, I think they would be able to. The United States would be under greater terrorist threats because they would obviously influence a lot of terrorist groups. They themselves are a terrorist group. And who knows what other ramifications. It would definitely not help the United States in our domestic way of life, and certainly not in our international relationships with the whole Arabic world and the Middle East.
It was not too long ago that President Obama was speaking in Cairo. He addressed not only the general population there, the leaders there, but he also addressed, it was called his Muslim speech because he addressed pretty much the whole Muslim world or intended to with this speech. We had a guest on last week, Robert Spencer, who said that he went out of his way at the time, and it was kind of considered odd to invite leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood to attend his speech. What does that tell you about how, at least at the time, the president was looking at the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, when I heard that speech, I thought, to put the best construction on it, that he was naive. One could even say more than that, that perhaps there were some hidden messages that he wanted to convey to them that would also strengthen those radicals over there rather than weaken them. I really don't know, but it certainly was a speech that was not to the benefit of the United States in the long run. And putting the best construction on it, I'd say he was naive. I'm not sure that was the whole answer, however.
Joe is listening in St. Louis. Joe, thank you for waiting on the line.
Hi, Todd. A question and a comment. Question, are the Muslim Brotherhood considered radicals, or are they basically conservative in the sense that they're practicing what the Quran teaches? And comment, and I'd like your guest to respond, I've heard it said that, and this is a little more broad than the Muslim Brotherhood, but it ties into the situation in Egypt, in order to get to Thomas Jefferson, that is democracy, you have to go through Martin Luther, as opposed to trying to convince Muslims to become a democratic society.
Thank you very much, Joe. Let's deal with this question first. He asks about whether or not they're radical or conservative. How would you sort that one out?
Well, if you talk about radical and conservative, if you talk from a Muslim perspective, they're very conservative. If you talk from the Western perspective, they're very radical. So I assume the questioner was asking, question the person was asking was from the Muslim perspective. Yes, they want to introduce Sharia law. They are for female genital mutilation. They are for giving women even less rights than they have in Egypt to this day. So that's basically, and the questioner asked or implied something else, I think. Maybe I didn't understand it correctly when he mentioned Martin Luther. I think he was thinking about whether Islam can be reformed. That issue often appears, and it's a very specious point, because the Reformation in the Christian context went back to the original founders, the apostles. Now, if you apply this model to Islam, where would we go back to the original founders of Islam? You'd go to Muhammad, the man who was in many ways Islam's first terrorist, who conquered the world by the sword, and who said, I'm the last of the prophets, and I'm sent with the sword, when he started his wars after 622, when he went from Mecca to Medina and conquered the world in Arabia of that day, and it hasn't stopped to this day. And the symbol, this one of the important symbols of Islam to this day, is the sword. And so to think that they can get we can have reformation like we had in the Christian context is a specious argument, if not worse than that. It's an ignorant argument from history, because when we went back to reform Christianity, we went back to the disciples, the apostles. If you want to go back to the beginning roots of Islam, you got to go back to Muhammad, who was not a peaceful man.
In that vein, PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly recently talked with several scholars inside and outside of Islam about Islam and democracy. Their consensus seems to be kind of cautious optimism. One of the questions they were asked to answer, can Islam make its peace with modernity and democracy? How would you answer that question with about a minute, Dr.
Not
Schmidt?
If they're true followers of the Quran. They cannot do that, because ultimately democracy conflicts with everything that the Quran teaches and everything that the conservative people in the Islamic sector hold to, whether it's in Iran or whether it's with the Shiites or whether it's the Sunnis. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood are basically Sunnis, but ultimately when it comes to certain values, they are very much aligned. For one of them is anti-Israel, anti-West, anti a lot of, well, all freedoms ultimately, anti-expression as we enjoy it in the Western world.
So not reform, but it has to become, if it were to make its peace with modernity and democracy, it would have to be something other than what Islam is
today. It would
today.
Have to be a revolution rather than a reform.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Folks, when you purchase The Great Divide using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for The Great Divide by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back, we have a half hour left in Issues, Etc. on this Monday afternoon. We're going to spend that half hour with Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University, Chicago. We're going to be talking about someone that you'll find in only two passages of Scripture. Actually, the name is only mentioned twice in Scripture, but we have verbatim a prophecy from her. And that's right, it's a her, the one and only true prophetess in the Old Testament. She has sought for her counsel, and she gives it. We'll find out into what situation this prophetess was put and what her message from the Lord, in fact, was with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Our Women in the Bible series continues on this Monday afternoon, February the 7th. You can join us with questions or comments. We'll talk about Huldah, the Old Testament prophetess, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. If you're not already a fan or a friend, become one. We'll be right back with Dr. Andrew Steinman.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Right to privacy versus right to life.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Americans have long cherished a right to privacy. Whether or not such right can be found in the Constitution is highly debatable. But lately, new airline security regulations have once again brought issues of privacy into the limelight. Public uproar over invasive security screening has elicited responses even from President Obama, who argues that fighting terrorism and flying safely outweigh our desire for privacy. In this instance, when choosing between privacy and safeguarding lives, the president chooses life. Is there an analogy here with abortion? Tune in next time as one commentator considers this question.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.